time is 8:13, about to go 8:14. Major David Katz, military strategist and historian joining, and author, joining us in a studio as he does every Monday. We're talking military, and we are trying to understand what on earth is going on in, with regard to Iran. So of course, as we know, over the weekend, Iran tried to, and not tried to, but, actually intercepted a British oil tanker. They tried to intercept two, in fact. They got away with one, and leaving the Brits, I think, a little bit shamefaced, don't you think?
Well, certainly it pushes the Brits into a corner, solidly behind the USA. So if they were going to try and get negotiations back on board together with an EU position, it's certainly now pushed the British into the USA block firmly at this stage of the game. So that's an interesting development.
So what is Iran playing at? I mean, I know that they're claiming that this is retaliation for the seizing of an oil tank a couple of weeks ago in Gibraltar that was on the way to Syria and was going to break that embargo. Is this really the case, or is this just Iran trying to find a moral equivalence?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a game plan happening over here. Certainly the Iranians want to get the negotiations back on board. They want to get the Americans back to the negotiating table. They want their sanctions lifted. They are being punished severely economically. So they are trying to do everything possible to get the negotiations back on board, and also to divide the EU against the Americans. And they're reasonably successful in that, by the way, because the EU has taken a different stance to this whole thing as opposed to the Americans. So that's their game plan, is that they're trying to remain relevant.
But surely this pushes everybody, as you just said, into the same block. I mean, you can't go around seizing other people's oil tankers.
Certainly not. But the EU is still wants to keep the plan on board. The initial negotiation, they want to put it back onto the table. The Iranians would very much like that, and they're trying to bring the United States back onto the negotiating table. And there are moves behind the scenes, where the Americans have, hinted at certain channels, and, the Iranians also. So it's not all war at this stage of the game. Definitely tensions have been ramped up. And,
it's interesting. I would have assumed that we would have gone straight to a conflict situation.
I don't think so. I don't think
anybody. No, well, clearly not. It hasn't happened yet.
There are certain. Say, there's definitely certain sectors within every single country that would look forward to some type of a quick conflict. The certain countries have stakes in this. They would like to rid the region of its nuclear capability with a quick strike, if that would ever work. And maybe inflict a regime change on Iran. They feel that a short and sharp conflict, if there would be such a thing, would be beneficial. So there are certain sectors in every single country that are looking forward to some type of a short, sharp conflict. But on the other hand, there are strong feelings in all the countries that this has to be negotiated. And there's a certain reluctance to going to war. You can see that Trump keeps on pulling back from the brink.
Yes.
There's a lot of brinkmanship going on here.
I keep wondering about that, is why is it that they're there but they're not there? And then is it indecisive, or
no, I don't
or
think
are
so.
They just recognizing?
I think, Dave,
I'm going to stop you for a second.
Alter your course to 360 degrees immediately, over.
This is a recording of the radio exchange.
This is British warship Foxtrot 236. Sir, I reiterate that as you are conducting transit passage in a recognised international strait, under international law, your passage must not be impaired, impeded, obstructed or hampered. Please confirm that you are conducting transit passage in a recognised international strait.
This is the Iranian vessels.
You are ordered change your course to 360 degrees immediately.
That's the Iranian.
If you obey, you will be safe. Over.
Sergeant, put control, female agent.
I mean, this is quite an incredible thing that this now has become, you know, this is the, I guess this is the modern, this is the modern face of war, is that we actually, get to hear some of these things. And, you know, we hear the recordings of how this went down, this capture.
That's
incredible.
That's what's incredible with the modern times, that we can be there as it happens. And, I don't think the Iranians are upset about this, that this is now, gone down.
Well, it was
international.
It was a success to some extent.
And it shows how vulnerable that little 24-kilometer stretch is on the Straits of Hormuz. And it's one of the weapons that the Iranians can use quite effectively, because obviously they're totally outclassed militarily-wise. They're not going to last long. If the Americans launch a strike against the Iranian military, although the Iranian military is substantial, it's an obsolete military, it's a large military, but the Americans are not going to have a major problem in dealing with the conventional side of the Iranian forces. Where the Iranians hold a lot of strength is on that 24-kilometer stretch of the Straits of Hormuz, which can easily be blocked by unconventional or conventional forces, or quite a lot of their missile capability. So this is where their strength is to be able to seize ships and stop the shipping going through those straits, of which up to a third of the world's oil shipping goes through those straits. So this is a very vulnerable area, and it's an area that can make a difference. And this is where you're going to see that they're going to try and make a difference and show the world that they are forced to be reckoned with in that area.
This is brinkmanship. I mean, this is now pushing it to the brink. And what you're suggesting is what Iran is relying on is that the West does not want war. And
certainly,
therefore,
Even Trump doesn't want war.
This will bring Iran back to the negotiation.
The USA
table.
Is in a very
or
strong
the USA
position.
Back to the
well,
negotiation
hope, that, that's what
table.
They're hoping for. But the USA is in a very, very strong position to state. All it has to do is just play a waiting game, because they've put an economic stranglehold on the Iranians, and the Iranian situation is worsening on a day-to-day basis economically. And all the Americans have to do is just sit back and leave it to the Iranians now to come up with something.
Well, that's why Iran's doing this. I mean, presumably this is an act, to some extent, an act of desperation.
Well, it is an act of desperation on their part, because one of the results of the American sanctions, that is, it's galvanizing the population behind this regime. And they are going to try and stay in power, obviously against a population that's not happy with the situation economically. But this is certainly galvanizing the Iranian population behind this regime.
But really, would it not be the other way around? I would have thought that there would be many sectors of the Iranian population who are already dissatisfied with the regime. And we've seen it more than we've seen it in many other countries. We've seen this chafing against the Ayatollah and the regime. People aren't necessarily happy with it.
This is what the Americans are hoping for.
Right. So wouldn't sanctions that the regime is clearly to be blamed for? Obviously, it'll be portrayed differently within Iran, but people still have access to international news. Wouldn't it turn them against their own government?
It doesn't seem to have. I mean, there's no signs coming out of Iran at this stage that the population are. Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's under.
But David,
it's under the boot there.
How does this end? Because if Iran now cannot release this vessel and still save face, it's impossible, unless they get something to show for it and can portray it as a victory, they cannot release this oil tanker. Would you agree with that?
Well, certainly this is brinkmanship. They'd have to come to some type of arrangement behind the scenes to save face. I agree with you. Either the Britain's going to lose face, or the Iranians are going to lose face, or they're going to have negotiations behind the scenes that nobody loses face. But how does this all end? You're 100% right. How does this end? I don't want to predict a conflict. We can't say there is going to be a conflict. But let's say, what happens if there is a conflict? Where are the Iranian strengths? And their main strength is through their proxies. And who at the end of the day is going to be the biggest loser, should the proxies break loose and let go. It'll be the Israelis. The Israelis are facing a quite a situation with Hezbollah on the borders and Hamas on the borders, armed to the teeth. Hezbollah also now, veterans of the Syrian conflict over the last few years. Not the same Hezbollah that we saw a few years ago. Many rockets all pointing at Israel. And another front also. The Hezbollah has now got a Syrian front, as opposed to only having a Lebanese front many years ago. So Israel's in a predicament at this stage of the game. So if things broke loose, certainly the Iranian military, conventional military, is not going to survive past a couple of days or a week or so.
Right, but the proxies,
and these proxies are not only sitting on the Israeli border, they're all over the world. So there's a lot to lose in a possible conflict.
You know, there's been a bit of a Twitter spat between Tzachi Hanegbi, who's an Israeli politician as well, and Iran, and he came out by saying that Israel's been the only country killing Iranians. Now, I think he said that in a very clumsy sort of a way, as many Israeli politicians do. But really what he meant by that, and what he explained he meant by that, is that they are the only ones. They are repeatedly attacking Iranian bases in Syria. They are keeping Iran very, very much at bay. And what he's saying is that the fact that Iran hasn't retaliated or has been so measured in their response is because Iran understands that Israel means business, and if they had to go one step beyond where they should, Israel will most certainly react to it. What you're saying obviously makes sense, in that if this conflict has to become more intense, Israel is going to be the target of Iran.
No question about it. It's going to be on the front line, and we don't know what the Iranian missile capability looks like. There may be long-range missiles that can strike Israel, but I think the major threat is from the proxies that surround Israel,
right,
with thousands of these missiles,
right,
which could swarm and overwhelm some of the Israeli defenses initially and cause a lot of damage. So the Israelis have got a large stake in what happens over here. And certainly they would want to also reduce the Iranian nuclear capability, because they are, I believe, 12 months away from enriching it up to a level, I think it's 95%,
yes,
a level where it becomes effective in building an atom bomb. So the clock is ticking with that also, because the Iranians are enriching at this stage of the game. They've gone beyond.
Well, they're saying so. They're hiding it.
They're not hiding it. So there's that threat. So there's definitely a clock ticking on that also. So the Israelis have a big interest in reducing Iran's nuclear capability. So there are all these tensions going on all the time. So,
well, what's fascinating to me is on this day in history, and we always take a look at what happened on this day in history around about 10 to the hour of 7. But on this day in 1987, the U.S. began its policy of escorting reflagged Kuwaiti tankers up and down the Persian Gulf to protect them from possible attacks by Iran. That was in 1987.
Yep.
That this was going on. It has been going on. It's quite incredible that the Iranian situation just doesn't get any better.
No, it's not. In fact, it's got worse, because Iraq was a bulwark against Iran at some stage, and that's been removed. So that leaves a vacuum there, a power vacuum. So the Iranians have definitely increased their capabilities in that area.
And strength, yeah.
And strength due to the fact that Iraq has fallen away. It's escalated, got worse, and we sit in a situation today, very, very worrying situation.
Indeed. Time is 8:27. I'm chatting to Major David Katz. We're going to take some ads. We're going to take news headlines. When we come back, we're going to continue with this conversation. I'd love to hear your thoughts on 34519 or 0618951019. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning.
Yeah.
And focaccia bread. You see, I think lamb stew is more when it's overcost and cold. What do you think, David?
Is that not an invitation?
Okay.
What time do you want us, Mervyn? Wow, I think you might be right.
What does
Mervyn
say?
It says, what time do you guys want to come over?
Yeah, there we go.
I thought, here we go. I misread that.
Excuse me for being rude. I was just called in grumpy. I'll come over.
Well, he will come over and make it up to you. So what are the things to eat and when it's so cold like this? David, what's your choice? What are you going for?
When it's cold like this, is a good curry, really hot.
So you're also going for curry?
I like a curry.
I like curry as well, but I think, isn't curry about overcost? Isn't it more sort of that kind of a mood? For cold, icy cold weather, I think you want like minestrone soup, you want butternut, I think you want soups, no?
You're reminding me about something.
What?
My mother used to cook in a pressure cooker. You remember a pressure cooker?
Oh gosh, yes. Whatever happened to pressure cookers?
What is a pressure cooker?
I don't know, why was it called a pressure cooker?
She had this thing on the stove with a little thing on the top that released the steam.
But was it really a pressure?
Steam pressure, I think.
Was it really? Was it just a hot pot?
She used to cook. A chicken in there.
Oh,
and that sounds too terrible. What, like stew? There's nothing worse than a boiled chicken.
Steamed,
oh my word!
I'm glad
I was never invited over for a meal there.
So that's what we used to have.
I'd rather go to Mervyn if you don't mind.
Yeah, let's all go to Mervyn. But yeah, a pressure cooker.
What happened to pressure cookers?
That's the story.
And the other one was a George Foreman.
George Foreman.
Are they still a big thing? What was
George
a George Foreman?
Foreman?
No, the no. other thing was electric frying pans. They were
yes,
the rage.
Yeah, they
electric
were all the rage,
frying
I remember.
Pans, yeah.
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 Mm. That's what was the point?
No idea. Because, why would you need an electric frying pan? You got a fry.
Tupperware were all the rage.
Tupperware, yeah.
Tupperware and electric frying pans. Listen, when you traveled and you were kosher, the electric frying pan was a lifesaver.
A Tupperware was also a lifesaver.
Well, of course, because that's how you got the food there.
The logistics beyond being kosher.
I remember going to Sun City with my parents, and there was always an electric frying pan plugged into a floor somewhere. What my mother could do with an electric frying pan. It was actually quite incredible.
Incredible.
Do you even get them anymore, electric frying pans?
I haven't seen that. No. And a pressure cooker, definitely not. I've never seen a pressure cooker.
But I want to know, was it really a pressure?
There was, because the lid, I remember opening the lid. I've got vivid memories of it. And the lid actually closed on. It was like a whole process to close that lid against the pressure. Definitely, yeah.
Okay, so Mervyn says, I have a pressure cooker and a slow cooker. So Mervyn, can you just tell us what a pressure cooker actually is?
Yes.
Because I've got no idea.
And why does pressure cooking differ from any other sort of
stew type cooking? It sounds very dangerous. It sounds dangerous.
Many people must have been maimed. Pressure cooking.
Like you're killing the chicken again.
pressure cooking gone wrong. Right, that type of thing.
Exactly. George Foreman made more money from his grill than he ever made from boxing. Just saying, that's from Jenny. And so it says cold weather food, macaroni and cheese, lasagna, ossobuco. That's the way to go. Except that you've got to start preparing the ossobuco when it's not even cold yet. You know, our cold snaps.
You prepare it in the summer. Prepare ossobuco in the summer for the winter.
Our cold snaps here are so short, you don't have time to make an ossobuco. By the time it's ready, it's summer.
Our cold snaps are so short. Is that an expression of hope or a fact?
It's fact. It's what it is. Absolutely.
Oh, another thing is sampan beans.
Sampan beans, very good.
Oh, sampan really?
Sampan beans, yeah.
Stamped mealies.
Okay, so Michael beans, from Gallimanna says, electric pressure cookers are now the rage. Best thing for cooking soup quickly, and electric frying pans still sell. That's from Michael.
Wow.
Yeah. Why would a pressure cooker cook anything more quickly? I suppose because it's under pressure.
And I'm trying to think what my son had this thing that he had to get from America.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know, it's like an element that you put into something. It's like a pressure cooker, but I don't know what it is. And then you can actually turn it on with Wi-Fi. But while you're still at work. No, it's very clever. But I can't remember what it's called.
So you leave it on the stove and then you remotely switch it on when you
find out. And of course it never worked because they bought the wrong voltage. So it took down the whole building. But I mean, aside from that, I'm sure it would have been very, very
well. The modern
successful
take on a pressure cooker is also you must probably switch it on by Wi-Fi and you put the amount of pressure. You can dial in the amount of pressure.
I'm not
using
buying
your
this
iPhone.
Whole pressure business. What do you mean pressure? How does pressure cook food?
Steam pressure. No, it definitely had steam because it had a steam release valve on the top and
weight. I understand, but
so
it isn't the pressure. Isn't it just that it traps the heat and the heat, it gets hotter?
No, there was pressure. Why would it be called a pressure cooker?
Why does pressure cook?
Why would it not be called a steam cooker?
Can we please get experts involved?
We need
oh my
help
goodness.
Here. Yeah. It's honestly
we need our listeners here.
All I know is that the chicken came out with
it's dumb and dumber. The final debate. Maybe we should go back to things less complicated, like what's happening in Iran.
That's simple.
That kind of pressure cooker we get. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we understand that.
No, Iran's simple in comparison, yeah.
You're right. Okay, so let's go back to that, because at least it's a subject that, that at least one of us know what we're talking about.
We sort
about
of understand what's going on there, yeah.
All right. So, David, what does it look like, should there be – let's look at the different scenarios. Iran captures a vessel that belongs to the UK. The UK can either decide to go in and get it.
Yeah, that could happen. Absolutely.
And
sure.
And I think it might. I think there's a possibility. What happens then?
Well, the Iranians could still choose. Well, what happens if they go in and that would obviously be an escalation of the conflict.
Right.
And that could lead to all types of things. And certainly that would be an opportunity now to, for somebody to, one of the powers to launch a surgical strike, try and take out some of the Iranian capability with their missiles, maybe even a nuclear capability. And that would lead to an immediate escalation, of the type that we're talking about.
Right.
And obviously that would cut off the, for a period of time, would cut off the oil transport through the straits. That would be under danger, because not only has Iran got a naval capability, although it's a very, it's small little ships, but they can cause a lot of damage.
Well, they are. They're already causing a lot of damage.
They're causing a lot of damage, but they've also got a land capability that they can point towards the sea, because the Straits of Hormuz are only 24 kilometers in breadth.
And
so there's a lot of land capability that they can apply to the naval situation, which would make it very difficult for shipping that's passing those straits. So, certainly there can be.
Is that the only way through that area? There's no other way around.
There's no other way around. Absolutely not. For a third of the world's oil that's being transported out of there. So that's 30% of the oil that would be bottled up there.
Now the US is completely independent, of course,
Middle East but and China, oil. China, Japan.
I'm not sure if we are.
No, we're certainly not independent, and we used to rely quite a lot on Iranian oil at a stage of the game. So a lot of the world's oil reserves come out of there. To nations that need it, so it would be have an immediate knock-on effect economically worldwide. So that's a threat. As I've said before, that's one of the Iranian threats that they can use in a very asymmetric situation, and they can use it immediately, and they can close those straits for a long period of time. Even sowing simple mines across those straits are going to cause a lot of trouble. And their small little boats can cause a lot of trouble, suicide missions here and there. So they have that capability. And everybody's being very, very careful about that type of a situation. I think what Iran also wants to demonstrate is that this is a real, real threat. And I think they're demonstrating it reasonably well. And the EU certainly, dependent a lot on the oil that comes out of that region, certainly doesn't want this to escalate. And this is another Iranian strategy behind this. Is to drive a wedge between the USA and the EU on this. And certainly the EU is taking a different stance to what the USA and Britain are taking at this stage of the game.
David, although we know that saving face and public image is very, very important to Iran, how important is it for the UK? Generally, that hasn't been their style of reaction and governance. But it would certainly seem that at some point they're going to have to stand up and say, you know, we're not going to accept you hijacking our vessels as they go through.
No,
this area.
They can't accept it. And I think they're going to do everything in their power to negotiate to get the vessel released, which doesn't solve the problem for the future. If Iran digs in on this, the British are going to find themselves in a situation. And like you say, I don't think they can step down from this. But the Iranians obviously have a plan in mind when they did this. They're going through the same scenarios that we're going through, and they have an end game in mind. Would it cost them to release the British ship after a period of time? I don't think so. I don't think it would cost them at the end of the day.
They've proved they can get it,
and they can do it again in the near future. So it would cost the Iranians a lot less to back down at this stage of the game after a certain period of time and a bit of brinkmanship than it would cost the British to release the tanker the Iranian tanker that they're holding. So the Iranians are holding all the cards at this stage of the game, and they can sort of determine
how powerful they are, even though the whole world practically is trying to get them to behave, and they just are not able to do so.
This is the new nature of war, is that countries that are not very powerful militarily but have a very strong ideology and are prepared to make sacrifices and are prepared to sacrifice the economy can be spoilers. can pose a very, very strong military and economic threat to the rest of the world. That's the new nature of the war, and people are realizing that more and more. And that's why we have the birth of these proxy Hezbollahs and Hamases that realize that although they're very militarily weak, they can cause a lot of havoc, because the other nations that they're fighting against have a lot more to lose. These are the cards that they hold, and they're certainly going to play those cards.
Right. Interesting, as Ansan says, aren't the British still in the nuclear deal? Why would they have started with the British? I think that's as a result of
From the seizure of the British of the Iranian vessel on the Straits of Gibraltar by the British.
Right.
Absolutely. So whether that was a wise move by the British or not, anyway, they've done it. So they've nailed their flag to the right. to the mast.
Mike Luber says the first ransom paid for a ship will determine the future. Israel gas fields are the solution, and of course I think that is the case. I think that the world's reliance, the lessening of the reliance on the oil from the region, must be a concern for Iran as well.
Certainly, but that's a very long-term game, is it not? I mean, we don't see in the foreseeable future that the world is becoming less reliant on oil. Although the technology works in the favor of eventually, there'll be substitute products for oil. But I mean, we're talking a long time into the future. Right now, as we stand today, the world is reliant on Middle East oil.
Right. Absolutely. Time is 8:46. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. We've been talking to Major David Katz with regard to the Iranian situation. We've also been talking about what to eat on a freezing cold day. We got into an argument about a pressure cooker. All right. So Ishai says this is what he says. Ishai says a pressure cooker works by using the high steam pressure inside to increase the boiling temperature of the liquid water inside the cooker. The higher the water temperature is what cooks the food faster. Yeah, David. I mean, it was obvious that.
Yeah, that's incredible. So what do you do?
I don't know.
No wonder that chicken didn't taste right. So you're boiling the bird.
Look, I have to tell you that honestly, that your mother's chicken sounded like a horror story. Nobody wants to eat chicken boiled in a pressure cooker. Nobody.